Drama and Entertainment BBC Radio 4 Extra
Now, a drama with impeccable credentials. Julian Rhine-Tutt and James Grout star in a play by Martin Wade, inspired by the true life story of an 18th century forger of the Bard.
Another Shakespeare by Martin Wade, with Julian Rhine-Tutt as William Henry and James Grout as Mr. Ireland.
My name is William Henry Ireland, and I am the celebrated forger of Shakespeare. Of this much, at least, you may be certain. As to my precise age, that's open to doubt. But I was, I promise you, very young, no more than 18 indeed, when I began the forgeries. My motive in making them was not base or criminal. There was no premeditated plan. It was nothing more at first than a desire to please my father. That's all. The year of the first fabrication was 1794. I was living with Mr. Ireland, that is my father, and with Mrs. Freeman, that is my father's housekeeper, in London, in a house just off the Strand. Mr. Ireland was an engraver, an antiquarian, a lover of books, perhaps, a speculator in them, certainly.
"We're all great Neptune's ocean, wash this blood clean from my hand."
He was also a professed enthusiast of the Swan of Avon.
"No, this my hand will rather the multitudinous seas incarnadine."
An enthusiast, he would often say, to the point of bardolatry.
"What a matchless genius was William Shakespeare. What beauties of expression he gives us. What marvellous insights into the infinite mysteries. Here was a giant, here was a god. When comes such another?" Mrs. Freeman, where were we?
"Enter Lady Macbeth."
"Ah, enter Lady Macbeth, indeed."
On account of Mr. Ireland's enthusiasm, we would gather in the drawing room of an evening.
"My hands are of your colour, but I shame to wear a heart so white."
And a Shakespearean drama having been selected by Mr. Ireland, we would read it right through.
"I hear a knocking at the south entry. Retire we to our chamber."
And Mr. Ireland would apportion roles as the play progressed. And the minor roles, it seemed, would always go to me.
"William Henry."
"Yes, sir?"
"You are playing the porter."
I was much in awe of my father, as much, perhaps, as he claimed to be of Mr. Shakespeare. He thought he knew a great deal, particularly about old books, and he thought that I knew very little about anything. So, you see, I received the impression that I was not much loved by Mr. Ireland, that he doted on his antiquities, but not on me. As to Mrs. Freeman, she was the housekeeper merely, or so I was given to understand, and I wasn't much distressed to be unloved by her. I once heard a rumour that in her younger days Mrs. Freeman had been a mistress of the Earl of Sandwich and had produced a child by him. You may make of that what you will.
"Ah, William Henry."
"Come in, boy, come in."
You asked to see me. Have I done something wrong?"
"You have done a great deal wrong by the fact of your doing nothing. Boy, Mr. Ireland
Thank
and
you,
I...
Mrs. Freeman. I will tell him. William Henry, after some consideration, I have decided that it is time...
High time.
..that you entered the world of work. Your academic attainment, unfortunately, is not all that it might have been."
"You have spurned the opportunities that were laid before you. You are a daydreamer, a time waster..."
"However..."
"...a dullard..."
"Thank you, Mrs. Freeman. However, what's past is past. You may, even at this late hour, make amends. There is a conveyancer in Chancery who is known to Mrs. Freeman."
"And I have talked with him, and he has agreed that you should work for him and be trained by him and become his articled clerk."
"And if you set to with a will and a conscientious and steady, you may, Deo..."
"Volente?"
"Get on."
"A little."
"Any questions?"
"I am grateful to you, Mr. Ireland."
"I should think you are."
"However..."
"You might also, might you not, show some gratitude to me."
"However, my ambition is to be a poet."
A poet?
"Yes, not an articled clerk."
"Boy."
"Yes, Mrs. Freeman."
"You are a fool."
"William Henry, Poetry is the noblest, the finest, the sublimest pursuit open to man. For those three reasons, it is not open to you.
I should think not.
You have shown me your attempts at the poetical, and I have given you no encouragement.
That's true.
It would be an insult to the Bardic Brotherhood if I were to pretend that you can do anything more than disgorge lines of doggerel. But if you are obstinate enough to continue in that practice, you must do so in your hours of leisure. Work starts on Monday.
Such work as there was, copying, sorting, did not prove burdensome. I found that I had time in abundance to think, to dream. The room that I had been put in was in part a storeroom, with a chest full of ancient deeds and documents. And one afternoon, when my employer had left the office, I made a thorough search of the chest and came across a batch of papers, a few written upon, many blank. And their watermark was a jug. And Mr. Ireland, I remembered, had told me that this was a watermark used in Shakespeare's time. And I knew then what I would do. And the next day, having obtained some very pale brown ink, "We, the undersigned," I began the fabrication. "Do hereby enter into," writing upon the ancient paper, "a deed of mortgage," in a neat and careful script, and at the foot of the document I appended the great man's signature. "William," which I had traced from a facsimile in one of Mr. Ireland's books. "Shakespeare." And thus, to please my father, I created my first forgery. It wasn't hard at all.
Mr. Ireland, sir?
Yes?
I have something to show you. Something to give you, indeed. I am aware, sir, because you have said so on more than one occasion, that what you most crave in all the world is something written by the immortal bard.
Oh, indeed. What I meant by that, of course, was a vestige of his own handwriting.
Yes, yes, exactly. There. What do you think of that?
Oh, William Henry, I have no... Sam. Oh, Sam, what is this?
Sam is the name Mr. Ireland gives me on those less than frequent occasions when he is pleased by my conduct. It is the name of my brother who died, and who would, if he had lived, have been everything a son of Mr. Ireland ought to be.
It is a deed of mortgage. No date is given.
That was remiss of me.
But it is early 17th century, I think. Late 16th, possibly. And there are three signatures. Michael Fraser. John...
Hemmings, I think it is.
Hemmings. There was a John Hemmings, a friend of Shakespeare, who published the first folio.
And the third signature, sir?
William... Shakespeare.
Do you think the document is authentic, sir?
Authentic? Why, yes, I do, most certainly. All my knowledge tells me that it is. Oh, Sam, to hold in my hands a document which bears the autograph of the mighty Prince of Poets. Is it indeed for me?
It is, sir, if you will do me the honour of accepting it.
Oh, Sam. Oh, Sam.
Such joy. To my recollection, I had never been kissed by my father before.
Oh, Sam. Tell me, Sam, how did you obtain such a very important and valuable item?
Now, here again I had been remiss. I had quite failed to prepare for the question, predictable though it was.
Well, sir, I was given it.
Given it?
By a gentleman, yes. A man of fortune and property.
Why?
Because he has befriended me.
Good Lord! Good heavens! And what is the gentleman's name?
Well,
I have a right to know, surely, since I am so greatly in his debt.
Yes. Forgive me, Mr. Ireland, but I cannot tell you his name. He asked me expressly not to divulge it. He wishes to be referred to simply as Mr. H. Uh-huh.
And how was it you became his friend?
Quite by chance, yes. At a coffee house. And in the course of conversation there, I told Mr. H of your fondness for antiquities. Ah. And to mark our new friendship, he brought me this document today.
Oh. Does he have other documents?
I believe he does. He informed me that he had inherited a quantity of ancient papers, not a few of which were once in Shakespeare's possession.
Oh,
he keeps them in a trunk, yes, in his country house, but he knows not the precise contents of the trunk. Since he is not an antiquarian himself, he regards the items as mere curiosities.
I see. So, who can say? If your friendship with Mr. H were to continue, he might repeat his act of generosity.
Mr. Ireland was greedy for more of my gentleman friend's documents, and I was greedy for Mr. Ireland's gratitude. Encouraged by my success and driven by an innocent desire to please my parent, I worked hard in my room at the conveyancing office. I worked harder at my fabrications than I did for my employer. They were relatively simple items at first, legal papers, contracts relating to the Globe Theatre, and so on. But my father, while remembering to acknowledge his thanks for gifts already received, expressed a longing for something of greater interest still, something that would demonstrate a little of the spirit of Mr. Shakespeare. A letter, perhaps. A letter in the matchless bard's own hand.
Here, Mrs. Freeman, here it is. Would you care to read it?
To His Grace of Southampton. My lordy, do ye not esteem me a sluggardy, for thus having ye delayed to thank you for your great bounty?
The general style of Shakespeare's handwriting I worked out with no great difficulty.
The truth is, my lordy, I could find not the phrases commensurate with my indebtedness.
I simply used the 11 letters of his signature as a guide for the remaining 15.
Oh, gratitude, gratitude.
As for the words themselves...
Thou art a body which blossoms but blooms but never dies.
The words were mine.
Extraordinary. Remarkable. Do you not think so, Mrs. Freeman?
I think the spelling is extraordinary and remarkable, most certainly.
It may appear idiosyncratic, Mrs. Freeman, but it is of the period, I promise you.
Then they must have made very free with the alphabet in Shakespeare's day. Every consonant, it seems, is written twice over, and every word has to end in E. Absurdity.
Mrs. Freeman was right to be sceptical. My mode of spelling was more indebted to the famous literary forgeries perpetrated by the unfortunate, ill-fated, ever-to-be-lamented Thomas Chatterton than to any serious research into the orthography of the period. I was not, you see, particularly rigorous about my Shakespearean fabrications. My first, simple aim was to please my father. In order to please him, I had to dupe him, and there seemed to be very little difficulty in doing that.
Well, 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 what can this be, Sam?
Mr. Ireland had been impressing upon me that his joy would be unconfined if the next item from my friend's trunk were to be the manuscript of a play, a dramatic text in the by now familiar hand.
Oh, the tragedy of King Lear.
A favourite of Mr. Ireland's.
Sam, my dear Sam! Being derived from Master Holinshed, but with some departures therefrom, which I trust my gentle readers will forgive me for. Oh, remarkable! Is the entire play here?
It is, sir, yes, though not the entire play as you know it, that there is a little more.
More?
Yes, and in truth, sir, a little less. I recall, sir, during our readings of Shakespeare's plays, that when we have encountered words which are gross, licentious, or lacking in taste or poetry...
Ah, yes.
You have often declared...
Such impurities are not the bard's.
Exactly so.
They are things inserted into the original by actors and other coarse meddlers, which then were kept and published.
Precisely, sir, yes. And you will discover here, I think, how your judgment is borne out. No accretions or imperfections in this text, I warrant you. No gaudy trappings. Uh-huh. Nothing but the great great man's spontaneous flow. Did you not say, for example, that at the very end of the play, those lines which Kent speaks...
I have a journey, sir, shortly to go.
My master calls, and I must not say no. Yes, jingling and clumsy, you said.
Very jingling and clumsy.
You refuse to believe that the Prince of Poets could have written such verses. Now, see here... The jingling, clumsy, offending couplet is quite gone.
Good heavens!
And in its place?
Thanks, sir, but I go to that unknown land that chains each pilgrim fast within its soil.
A much finer couplet, do you not think?
Extraordinary. Remarkable.
I followed Lear with Hambletti, Prince of Denmark. Or rather, a single scene therefrom, and that a somewhat shortened scene, in which numerous obscenities directed by the prince to Ophelia were expunged. To tell the truth, I was becoming jaded. My hope with regard to each of my fabrications had been to receive Mr. Ireland's thanks. But it seemed to me that I had managed little more than to excite his greed. Therefore, I decided to take a rest from my labour. No forgeries were forthcoming for several weeks. And Mr. Ireland, as a result, became impatient and felt obliged to write to my friend Mr. H, demanding to know what other papers lay in the trunk and what was to become of them.
There you are, at last.
Mr. Ireland, sir.
Did you convey my letter to your friend?
I did.
Well, do you have his reply?
I do, sir.
Well, quick, give it me. My dear sir, permit me, please, to be unambiguous. William Henry is a young man after my own heart. He is perspicacious, he is sensitive, he is fine and noble. Heavens. And everything that he tells me shows him to be a dutiful and a loving son. And a wondrously gifted son, too. Nothing yet, though, about the papers in the trunk. Oh, Mr. Ireland, what a happy man you are to be the father of one who, if he lives, will rank as another Shakespeare. If he lives, why shouldn't you live?
I suppose, sir, that Mr. H is mindful of the many young, precocious talents who have been struck down before their time of glory. The unfortunate, ill-fated, ever-to-be-lamented Thomas Chatterton, for example.
Your son's effusions, which he is good enough to show me, the profound thoughts that he shares with me, these declare him, sir, to be a phenomenon. How on earth is it, I wonder, that you are a phenomenon in the presence of Mr. H, while with me you are a great deal less? Oh, Mr. Ireland, be gentle with him. Be patient with him. For believe me, you have a son who will make you amazed.
Mr. H is too kind.
In praising you, he is. But he is less than kind to me. Not a word about the documents. Not a word.
Mr. H began to be a significant figure in my life. Not only, I mean, as a benefactor, but as one who took a real interest in me, who recognised my qualities, my literary qualities most particularly, and who encouraged me. With Mr. Ireland, on the other hand, I was experiencing some disenchantment. My only virtue in his eyes seemed to be that I had befriended the possessor of a large batch of Shakespearean papers, which papers, I began to suspect, Mr. Ireland was intending to use for his own advantage. My innocent forgeries were to enhance his prestige, if not enlarge his income.
William Henry?
Yes, Mr. Ireland.
I intend to hold an exhibition.
An exhibition? Indeed, sir, yes, sir. Do you mean a Shakespeare exhibition, sir?
I do.
Sir...
These precious things I've been given by your good friend, I cannot keep them to myself. Others must have the joy of seeing them, too.
Must they, sir?
Well, just a few others, I mean. By invitation only.
I tell you, I was thoroughly perturbed by Mr. Ireland's plan. My forgeries had been intended for his eyes only. They had passed his scrutiny, it's true, but he, it seemed to me, had from the start been unnaturally disposed to believe in them. The verdict might, perhaps, be very different when it came from men such as the critic, Dr. Wharton.
Good morning.
The learned Dr. Parr.
Good morning.
and Mr. Boswell, the biographer.
A very, very good morning.
Gentlemen, you are all most welcome.
Dry-mouthed and stuttering, I told them the story of the generous Mr. H., and they peered at the documents, which Mr. Ireland proudly, but only very briefly, held before them.
Mr. Boswell?
And then Mrs. Freeman distributed refreshments.
Tea for Dr. Wharton, tea for Dr. Parr, and a brandy for Mr. Boswell.
Thank you.
And then...
Gentlemen, I would like, if I may, to read you some extracts from these precious papers.
I stood by the door, tense, sweating. The fleeting outward appearance of the papers had, perhaps, deceived our visitors. But what of the words themselves, the means of expression, the poetry? That was the true test.
Is there in heaven aught more fair than thou, sweet nymph of Avon fair?
Mr. Ireland read to them a poem written for Anne Hathaway.
Is there on earth a man more true than Willie Shakespeare is to you?
He read to them Mr. Shakespeare's profession of his Christian faith.
O God, I am weak and frail by nature. Cherish me therefore as the sweet chicken that under the covert of her speeding wings receives her little brood.
And he read extracts from the new Lear. Then we waited for the verdict.
Mr. Boswell?
Well, there can, it seems to me, be no room for argument.
No, no indeed.
None whatsoever.
Silence. I looked at Mr. Ireland, and he was looking at the visitors, and it seemed to me that his face betrayed cunning as well as hope. And the thought suddenly thrust itself upon me. Mr. Ireland knows. The professed student of antiquities has not been duped after all. He knows my fabrications for what they are, and he intends to use them to dupe others.
These papers surely bear incontrovertible proof they have upon them. The mark of
original
and sublime genius.
Absolutely. They carry the very stamp of Shakespeare's soul.
They are indubitably the work of the great man himself.
For if they are not, they are from heaven.
What's your view, Boswell?
Mr. Boswell, his face aglow with rapture, walked towards Mr. Ireland, knelt, and put his lips to the papers which Mr. Ireland held.
I have seen the precious relics of the bard. God be praised.
God be praised, yes. Mr. Ireland himself, I suspected, was not a true convert. But our visitors believed. In time, other visitors likewise. Men of scholarship believed, men of rank believed, among them the Prince of Wales and Mr. Pitt. And all of them agreed that the Shakespeare papers bore irrefutable evidence of the bard's transcendent qualities. I was, it was clear, much more than a mere forger. I was a literary genius, as I had always suspected. Mr. Ireland, I have been in conversation with Mr. H.
Have you?
He informed me that he has been looking through his trunk.
You know, William Henry, I wish he would permit you to do the same, or myself, indeed. Well?
He has discovered the manuscript of a play.
Another? Oh, Sam, oh, Sam. Which one? Tell me, when might I see it?
When? He didn't say.
He didn't? Why not? Did you not press him on the matter? Which play is it?
To tell the truth, this information was not yet known to me. Whichever play it was to be, I had decided that I would write it and would attribute it to Mr. Shakespeare. But that was as far as I had progressed. You'll never guess it, sir.
I have no wish to guess it. Tell me.
I gazed at my father as I searched for a response. Noticed upon the wall behind him a drawing which he had done. A copy of a scene from early British history showing King Vortigern receiving wine from a Saxon princess.
Tell me, Sam!
Sir, the play is Vortigern.
Vortigern?
Shakespeare wrote a play about Vortigern?
I was familiar with the story, had read how King Constantius made his general, Vortigern, co-ruler of the kingdom.
But, Sam, that is quite extraordinary.
And how Vortigern, greedy for power, arranged for Constantius to be killed.
Look, Sam, there above the mantel. It's a drawing of mine.
Yes, sir, I know, sir, yes.
Vortigern. Extraordinary. You are certain it is Shakespeare's?
Oh, believe me. As soon as you see it, sir, you will know it to be his. It seemed to me, as I embarked upon this bold enterprise...
Act 1, Scene 1...
...that if the monarch of the English stage had not written a play about Vortigern, then he ought to have done.
Enter King Constantius, who sits upon his throne. Enter Vortigern.
The familiar Shakespearean motifs were there. Constantius's willing surrender of power... Compare Lear. Vortigern's mounting ambition and regicide. See Macbeth.
Constantius speaks. Good Vortigern. Now peace doth bless our isle, and the loud din of war no more affrights us.
On top of that, I introduced a fool, and I made Vortigern's wife go mad, and I clothed his daughter in male attire and sent her into the forest. Such was the wealth of material and the flux of inspiration, I tell you. The play seemed to write itself.
Mr. Sheridan, sir, I will be straight with you.
And I with you, sir.
I could have gone to others with this play.
Of course you could.
But I came to you, sir, because I know you to be a good man of the theatre and a lover of the Prince of Playwrights.
I am not particularly. A lover, I mean, of your Prince of Playwrights.
You are not, sir.
No, sir. My own dramas, I find, do better business.
Oh.
And as for this particular piece, it is very, very long.
So is Hamlet. Hamletty.
Nor could I discern within its length any spark of imagination or metrical exactitude. If it is the case that Shakespeare wrote this play...
If, Mr. Sheridan...
He must have been very young when he did so, or very ill. The Shakespeare I know, but do not love, had many faults. But at least he could manage poetry. At least he could number 10 syllables to a line.
I see... Well, sir, you have made your thoughts quite clear.
I hope so, Mr. Ireland. However, allow me to be clear about this also. I am minded to stage the play.
You are?
It may not entertain, it may not be comprehended, but it ought at least to arouse a certain curiosity.
£250 down, and one half of the profits from those performances whose receipts exceed £350.
Are those good terms?
Not quite as good, Mrs. Freeman, as I had hoped.
Not quite as good, I'd imagine, as what Mr. Richard Brinsley Sheridan offers himself when his own plays are on the stage.
Even so, Mrs. Freeman, if Vortigern achieves a good run, we might expect £1,000 or even two.
Will the boy require a share?
Hmm? Well, yes, I suppose he will. Hmm. But since he is, according to my calculations, not yet of age, it will be... held in trust for him.
Mr. Ireland, I know very little, I admit, about ancient documents.
Very little indeed, Mrs. Freeman.
But I am not a fool. And when the boy tells of becoming a friend of a gentleman of fortune, he who never made a friend in his life, and how the said gentleman, who must remain conveniently anonymous, has a trunk which brings forth ancient papers from time to time, and how he considers the boy, whom you and I know can neither rhyme nor scan, to be a poetical marvel, then I say balderdash. The documents are forgeries, Mr. Ireland. Mm-hmm. Oh, they are not the boy's forgeries. He's not nearly clever enough for that. But they are forgeries nonetheless.
Well, Mrs. Freeman, that is your opinion, and you are entitled to it, despite your confessed ignorance about these matters. But in future, Mrs. Freeman... It might be beneficial to all of us if you were to keep your opinion to yourself.
The news that Vortigern was to be performed delighted me and affirmed the faith I had in my literary accomplishment. But my joy was soon to be somewhat diminished.
With respect to Vortigern, by the way, I'm going to arrange that it is published as well as performed.
Oh, yes. More dumplings, Mr. Ireland?
In fact, yes, please. It's my intention to publish all the papers.
All of them, sir?
All of them together in a single beautifully produced edition.
Ah, yes. But, sir...
We'll have facsimiles made of the originals and engravings, and I shall write a preface, and I shall raise the money by subscription. Believe me, it cannot fail.
Engravings? Facsimiles? My forgeries, which had been conceived and written in haste, which contained ill-researched references to dates, events, and persons, these were to be copied, word for word, and blot for blot, and exposed to public scrutiny. And then, I feared, the game would be up. Sir!
No, I am resolved.
But, sir, the papers were offered by my friend Mr. H as tokens of his esteem and goodwill towards me. It was never his intention that they should be published.
Perhaps not, but it is mine. William Henry, if Mr. H is indeed your friend, why should he object to an enterprise which would benefit the public at large, and us?
Sir, the plain fact is that neither you nor I can prove absolutely that the papers are genuine.
No, indeed.
What if they are not genuine? What then?
But they are.
What if they were shown to be forgeries or generally acknowledged to be so?
The boy's question, I think, is a pertinent one, Mr. Ireland.
Mrs. Freeman, the papers are genuine, I tell you. And that is all that needs to be said. We have truth on our side. And truth as ever will out.
William Henry!
Mr. Ireland, sir.
I must have a word.
I am on my way to work, sir.
Oh, no matter. This is important. I wish to speak to your gentleman friend. Is he in town?
I'm not certain.
Well, wherever he is, find him and ask him, nay, plead with him, to abandon his desire for anonymity. Tell him that if he could step forward from out of the shadows, if he could declare some authority as to the origin of the papers, then so much doubt and uncertainty in other people's minds, I mean, would be removed. And if he would permit me to include a statement from him as part of my preface to the published paper...
Sir, I have explained to you before that Mr. H is firmly set against publication.
Then Mr. H is either a mischief-maker or a fool.
I see.
Oh, William Henry, dearest Sam, the truth is this, that in my love for the bard, in my enthusiasm and my innocent desire to place his papers before the public... I have, of necessity, implicated myself in a difficult and perhaps contentious business. Sam, my standing in the world, not to mention some useful income, though that is, by the by, rests upon these papers. Advise your friend as much. Tell him that if he is able to demonstrate the authenticity of the Shakespeare papers now... Please, is the time to do so.
But Mr. H, being a very private man, would not give way to my father's entreaties. He refused to reveal his identity. He refused to make a statement about the provenance of the documents. And though the publication of the papers did something for Mr. Ireland's pocket, it seemed to do very little for his prestige. The critics, as I had feared, found much to criticise. The believers began to doubt... and the doubters began to disbelieve. All was in jeopardy, and our single hope of salvation lay in King Vortigern. Only he could save the day. The place, the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane. The date, the 2nd of April. The opening was to have been considerably earlier, but had been delayed. Altogether, preparations for Vortigern were far from perfect. And it seemed to me that there had been a decided cooling of Mr. Sheridan's feet since he first agreed to stage the play. But the house was packed, nonetheless.
So, William Henry?
Yes, Mr. Ireland?
The drama begins.
The applause was for the actor-manager, Mr. Kemble, who was in the title role. Mr. Bensley played King Constantius.
Good Vortigern, now peace doth bless our isle, and the loud din of war no more affrights us. 'Tis our desire, therefore, that thou deniest us not that which anon we crave thee to accept.
Most gracious sovereign, to command is thine, and as a subject, mine is to obey.
Mr. Kemble, so I later learned.
Now then, good king, prepare thee for the worst.
Had conceived the notion that Vortigern was not written by Shakespeare, and he had therefore taken against it.
For ere the thick and noisome air of night shall with damned Hecate's baneful spells be filled, thou must from hence to the cold bed of death, to whom alike both peasant and king are slaves.
Also, he had tried to arrange that the play's opening should fall on April the 1st.
Come then, black night, and hood the world in darkness. Seal close the hearts of those I have suborned.
As for Mr. Kemble's acting, which is at the best of times stilted and declamatory.
Let pity turn them not from their fell purpose.
In Vortigern he contrived, an easy task for him, that it should descend into crudity and grossness. To tell the truth, Kemble wanted the play destroyed.
And so, too soon, my life is ended!
Oh! Oh! Mr. Philemore, as the Saxon general Horsus, made his own unfortunate contribution in Act 4. Contriving that Horsus should die, groaning loudly, directly under the curtain, so that later, when it fell, he was struck by the curtain's wooden roller. And groan some more. But it was left to the egregious Mr. Kemble.
Oh, then thou dost ope wide thy hideous jaws
to deliver the coup de grace.
And with rude laughter and fantastic tricks.
This speech was intended to be the drama's climax, in which Vortigern addresses death. But Mr. Kemble...
With rude laughter, I say.
Mr. Kemble chose to make a jest of my poetry.
And with fantastic tricks, thou clasps thy rattling fingers to thy sides. And when this solemn mockery is ended...
Yes, that was the line. That was the line, and it was all of 10 minutes. 10 minutes, I tell you, before the hubbub subsided. At which point, Mr. Kemble thought he should repeat his success.
And when this solemn mockery is ended...
Not a syllable more of the play was ever heard.
I have received a note from Mr. Sheridan. The play is done for. He's putting on his school for scandal tonight. The noise, the jeering, it was all premeditated, you know.
You think so?
Most certainly. Deliberate sabotage by my enemies. By those jealous, malicious, spiteful Shakespeare mongers who cannot bear the fact that I have acquired such precious documents. Who have decided that the papers must be forged. And who pretend to find faults in them and inconsistencies. As if they had more knowledge of the bar than I do. I say this, let them find a million so-called errors. It alters nothing. The papers are genuine.
There were few left now who thought them so. The Vortigern disaster, coupled with the tax made upon the published papers, these convinced the populace that the items all were forged. And since it was Mr. Ireland, not I, who was involved in directing the public's gaze upon the public's gaze now fell upon him. And it was generally proclaimed that my father was a fraud. Or if he wasn't that, then he was a fool, most certainly. And it occurred to me that there was a simple way to free my father from shame. A course of action which by happy chance would at the same time advance my literary career. I decided that I must come clean at last. Claim authorship of the forgeries, astonish the world, and win the recognition and admiration that was due to another Shakespeare.
I would begin at home.
Mr. Ireland informs me that you wish to talk to us about a very important matter.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Is it in relation to the Shakespeare papers?
It is.
You know, the money that is yours from the book and from the play...
Mr. Ireland.
It's all being kept for you. It's all safe.
It is not about the money that I wished to talk.
I should think not.
No, it is about the papers themselves.
William Henry.
The truth is...
I would strongly advise you...
Yes, the truth
to
is...
think very carefully.
They are forgeries.
No.
They are forgeries, each and every one.
I knew it. I told you they were, Mr. Ireland.
They are not forgeries.
I promise you they are.
You are mistaken.
No, no, Mr. Ireland. There is no possibility of error. I know they are forgeries. I made them.
You?
William Henry, you are a liar and a fool. And if you thought we would believe your lies, you are a fool twice over. You did not forge those papers.
I did not, sir.
No, boy, you did not. You did not because you could not. You are a dullard. You could not manage such a thing. You did not forge the papers. The papers are not forged.
If you did forge...
Mrs. Freeman, the boy is a liar.
Why did you do it?
Mrs. Freeman, he did not forge the papers.
If you were to have forged them, why would you have done it?
To please Mr. Ireland and to show the world that I am a poet.
Oh, spare us, please.
A poet of rare talent, but of tender years, like the unfortunate, ill-fated, ever-to-be-lamented Thomas Chatterton, who surrendered his life before his 18th birthday.
Idiot, daydreamer, time-waster. William Henry, you did not forge the papers. But one thing I think you did forge, and that was the letter to me from Mr. H, in which he was so full of your praises.
Ah, no, sir,
that letter was your own. It must have been... For no one other than your foolish self could be deceived into believing you to be a genius.
In truth, sir, in very truth, that letter was not my work.
Of course it was. A pathetic device for indulging your vanity and gratifying your absurd pretensions.
Mr. H, we can assume, does not exist.
Oh, but he does, I assure you. And I thank God for his love and affection and encouragement.
Oh, do you indeed? You did not forge the papers.
I did, sir. Come to the room where I do my work. I will show you there the rolls of parchment that I used, the ink of antique appearance, the rough copies I made, my notes for Vortigern.
You did not forge the papers.
I did, sir. And I intend to prove it to the world. I shall write my confessions.
Write your confessions? You mean, do you not, that you shall find someone else to write them for you?
I shall write my confessions, sir, and I shall get them published. But first, sir, first... I shall leave home.
Soon?
Yes, within 24 hours.
Excellent. Do not expect a fatted calf on your return.
I shall, perhaps, like the unfortunate Thomas Chatterton, achieve no glory while I live. Though I have claimed Vortigern as my own, there are a great many who, on account of my tenderness of years, cannot believe me. And some also who do believe me, but who refuse to acknowledge that the play has any worth. I have left home. I have written to Mr. Ireland, in my own hand. I have informed him that my dear friend, Mr. H, has invited me to his country estate, where I shall have exclusive use of a two-wheeled carriage and access to a cellar stocked with vintage port. Mr. H is a man of good taste as well as wealth, a man who recognizes my genius, a man who is more of a father to me than Mr. Ireland can ever be. With him, I'll stay.
Another Shakespeare was written by Martin Wade. William Henry was played by Julian Ryan Tutt, Mr. Ireland by James Grout, Mrs. Freeman by Tessa Worsley. Dr. Parr and Mr. Bensley by Andrew Wincott, Kemble and Boswell by Roger Walker, and Sheridan and Dr. Wharton by Gavin Muir. The play was directed by Cherry Cookson.